and moldy and cold. It was 8 feet square, empty except for four duffel bags stacked one on top of the other, each wrapped in a white garbage bag covered in dust. The cache contained pistols, rifles, ammo, clothing, and vacuum-packed food and medical supplies. He tossed the CZ he'd picked up in the gunfight in the metro into one of the bags and retrieved a small Walther P99 compact pistol and two extra magazines. The weapon was clean and well lubricated, but still he checked the ammunition and the operation of the slide and the striker. He ignored the rest of his guns. He knew he could hardly cross the border into the European Union with an arsenal on his back. The handgun would just have to do. Next, he ripped open a medical kit, dropped his pants, and sat on the cold, dirty floor. The scratching of a rat in the aluminum walls let him know just how unsanitary these conditions were. He examined his day-old injury with a professional fascination. Cort had never before been shot, but he'd picked up dozens of other injuries in his work. His leg throbbed like a bitch, but he'd been hurt worse from burns, broken bones, a chunk of shrapnel in his neck. It came with the job. He poured a generous splash of iodine on the entrance and exit wounds. He tore open packages of bandages and antiseptic cream, redressed his injury as well as possible in the low light, and then crumpled all his supplies back into a small bag and shoved it into his pocket. In his second duffel, he found cold weather gear. He changed out of his light clothing into thick corduroys, a grease-stained brown cotton shirt, and a thick canvas jacket. A pair of work gloves went on his hands, and they warmed his fingers instantly. Leather hiking boots. A black watch cap that could be pulled down as a ski mask was positioned on his head. He zipped up all his cases, left them as he'd found them, closed the door, and climbed back on his bike. Minutes later, he found himself at a crossroads south of the city. A few hours west was the German border, then the French border, then Normandy. He blew out a sigh masked by his engine's rumble. Steam from his exhalation poured through the microfiber ski mask covering his mouth. If it were only that easy. No, he had to make a few crucial pit stops along the way. Gentry needed to pick up some materiel before he arrived in Normandy. He knew where to get what he needed, but he also knew it would involve an extra half day on the road. For one, Cort needed a new escape, new forged identity papers. He still had the passport he'd used to get into the Czech Republic, and he knew it would get him around in Central Europe, where they did not have all their immigration processes computerized and integrated, but he'd already been burned once under the legend Martin Baldwin, Canadian freelance journalist. Only a hopeless optimist or a damn fool would try to use it to get into the European Union, and Gentry was neither. But more than entree to the EU, he needed an escape solid enough to get him out of Europe when the shooting stopped. He knew that after he did what he had to do in Normandy, he would need to disappear somewhere far away, and clean identity papers would be the easiest way to achieve this end. Cort knew a man in Hungary who could provide him with documentation quickly. With well-made docs, he could cross quickly and efficiently into the EU and, should he have to produce papers for any reason along the way, he could safely do so. And then, once he'd finished his operation, he'd be able to dump all his guns and gear, hop on a plane to South America or the South Pacific or fucking Antarctica if the heat on him remained as hot as it had been the last 2 days. There'd be no time to run around and buy dirty docks after Normandy, and no way to quickly get off the continent without them. A cold November wind blew from the west as Gentry turned onto the E-65, the highway that would take him past Brno, into Slovakia, around Bratislava, and then south to the Hungarian border. From there, it would be a quick trip down to Budapest. 6 hours travel time, factoring in a couple of quick stops for gas and two poorly guarded borders. As he opened the throttle and leaned into the cold wind, he forced himself to think about the next 48 hours. It was grim contemplation, but necessary, and a hell of a lot better than dwelling on the past 48. Chapter 12. Gentry entered the capital of Hungary at 3 in the afternoon. Rain clouds hung low and gray-white, just tickling the rounded green tips of the hills of Buda on the west side of the Danube River that bisected the city of 4 million. Kort had last visited Budapest 4 years earlier on his first job for Fitzroy, a simple domestic op against a Siberian hitman who'd put a bomb in a local restaurant to kill a mob gunrunner, but in so doing also took out an American man's brother. The surviving brother had money and ties to the underworld, so it was a simple thing for him to connect with Fitzroy and hire a triggerman. And it was a simple thing for Fitzroy to send his newest asset to Budapest to find the offending Serb in a dockside bar, fill him with drink, then slip a knife into his spine and let his lifeless form slip silently into the black waters of the Danube. Gentry also knew Budapest from before, back in his time with the agency. He'd been in and out of the city once every couple of years for nearly a decade, tailing diplomats, running sneak and peeks against shady Russian businessmen in the mansions of Buda or the hotels in Pest. He'd once chased off a Tajik assassin, targeting the local CIA chief of station because there was no one else handy to deal with the matter. In Kort's work in the city, he'd had multiple run-ins with a local fraudster named Laszlo Szabó. Szabó was an amoral, devious scumbag. He'd do anything for anyone, waving a big enough wad of crumpled Hungarian forints in his face. His specialty was forgery, buying and selling identity papers and modifying them for whoever needed their identity changed on the fly. He'd helped a dozen wanted Serb war criminals flee Central Europe just ahead of the International Court of Justice and had made a shitload of money cleaning up the dirty loose ends of that war and others. Then, in 2004, he ran afoul of Gentry himself when he agreed to create papers for a Chechen terrorist who'd slipped out of Grozny and the Russians' grasp and into Budapest on his way farther west. Kort and his goon squad caught up with the Chechen in a warehouse Laszlo owned in the suburbs. It had gone loud, and in the melee, a tub of Szabó's photographic chemicals had blown up, killing the terrorist. Kort and his team had to disappear before the fire trucks arrived, leaving Laszlo to slip away. Immediately thereafter, Kort was sent after bigger fish, but he remembered Szabó, kept tabs on the forger, just in case someday he needed his services. Kort normally used documentation assets from Sir Donald Fitzroy's network, but it was nice to know there was also a man in Budapest who could, for the right price, turn him into anyone he wanted to be, at least on paper. Laszlo Szabó was an irredeemable piece of shit. Kort knew this beyond a shadow of a doubt, but Kort also knew Szabó was damn good at his work. It was 3:30 by the time Kort had filled his gas tank, bought a gyro and lemonade at a little Turkish stand on Andrássy Street, and parked his bike a block away from Laszlo's lair in Pest, just a kilometer or so from the shores of the Danube. Icy sheets of cold rain poured down, but Gentry did nothing to shield himself from the weather. His muscles were tiring from the already long day. The rain soaked his hair and his beard and his clothes, but it also kept him alert. The door to Laszlo's building was a deception. A rusty iron plate on hinges sunken in a stone building on Etvos Utka Street. It was covered with yellowed and torn handbills and stood no more than 5 feet high. It looked like no one had passed through since the Second World War, but Kort had just finished his soggy meal of lamb chunks and cucumber sauce folded into a pita when the door creaked open and disgorged two thin black men. Somalis, Kort guessed. In Europe, illegally, obviously, since no one who had access to legitimate papers would have need to come see Laszlo. Kort knew how easy it was for Africans and Middle Easterners to immigrate legally to the continent these days. These two knuckleheads walking past him in the rain somehow didn't qualify for the near-universal rubber stamp entry, which indicated to Gentry that these were some seriously shady fuckers. In a moment of perspective, the gray man realized there were few people on Earth more wanted than he, so Kort allowed he was, by definition, likely a shadier fucker than either of these two Somalis. Gentry banged on the little iron door with an open left hand. His right hovered above the Walther pistol in his waistband and hidden under his wet jacket. There was no answer after a minute and a further knock. Finally, Court found a little plastic intercom button tucked into the upper left corner of the doorway.
Sabo, I need your help. I can pay.
A tinny response through the intercom.
References?
His accent was unmistakably Hungarian, but his English was good. The tone of his voice was sheer boredom. A clerk in a paint store. Court was just the next of a long line of customers reaching the counter to inquire about goods.
I'm one of Donald Fitzroy's men.
Though Sabo was not a network asset, he would certainly know of Sir Donald. A pause, just long enough for Court to worry, ended with a buzz and the sound of remote-controlled door locks clicking open. Court pushed in the iron door warily, knelt, and entered a dark hall behind it, followed a pinprick of light 50 feet on. The light was another doorway, and through it, Court found a large workshop, part science lab, part library, and part photo studio. Laszlo was there, sitting at a desk against the wall. He turned to face his visitor. Sabo wore his gray hair long over his shoulders. His clothes were Hungarian drab, black jeans and a polyester shirt open halfway down to expose his rail-thin chest. He was 60, but an East Bloc 60, which looked 80 in the face but 30 in the physique. A life of physicality, a life of hardship. He appeared to Court something like an aging rock star who still fancied himself a catch. He stared at Court for a long time.
A familiar face, he said. Without the beard and the rainwater, perhaps I would know you?
Court knew Sabo had never seen his face. He'd worn a baklava mask when he took down Sabo's lair with the goon squad in 2004. Plus, it had been dark and the action quick and confusing.
I don't believe so,
said Gentry, looking around the room for security threats. Wires hung off the walls like ivy, tables and shelves of equipment, and boxes and books. Locked file cabinets along the wall, a full-sized photography studio in the corner with a camera on a tripod facing a chair on a riser.
An American, 35 years old, height 5'11", weight 170. You don't carry yourself like a soldier or a cop, which is good.
Court remembered fragments from the man's dossier. Sabo had been trained by the Soviets in electronic surveillance and forgery and other non-lethal black arts. He'd been used to spy on his own people by the Russians, but he had played for both teams, giving Moscow information on his countrymen while providing well-off Hungarians with escapes to get them through the Iron Curtain. His marginal and conditional of half-hearted help of his own people had proven to be just enough to keep a knife out of his chest after the fall of the Soviet Union, though Gentry remembered reading that Laszlo had been no stranger to getting his ass kicked in retaliation for his association with Moscow.
I'm just a man who needs some of your product. In a hurry, Court said.
Laszlo stood up and reached for a cane leaning against the desk. He leaned heavily on it as he crossed the room to his visitor. Court noted the Hungarian's slumped body and severe limp. This injury had developed since he last saw him 5 years ago. After an eternity, Sabo arrived in front of Court, leaned well into his personal space, put a hand up to the American's chin, and turned his head left and right.
What sort of product?
A passport. Clean, not fake. I need it now. I'll pay for the extra trouble. Laszlo nodded.
How is Norris?
Norris?
Sir Donald Fitzroy's son, of course.
You mean Philip?
Yes. Does Sir Donald still have the summer place in Brighton?
I wouldn't know.
Neither would I, to be honest.
Sabo allowed with a sheepish shrug. Court said, I understand your need to establish my bona fides, but I am in a rush. Sabo nodded, hobbled to a little bench, one of a dozen in the room, and each in front of a different table or desk covered with computers, microscopes, papers, cameras, and other gear.
Fitzroy has his own network. his own facilitators of documentation. Why would you be slumming with Laszlo?
I need someone good, and someone quick. Everyone knows you're the best. The Hungarian nodded.
Maybe that's just flattery, but you are exactly right. Laszlo is the best.
He relaxed.
I'll do a great job for you. Maybe you can speak to Fitzroy about the service. Put in a good word for Laszlo, you understand.
Court knew to loathe men who referred to themselves in the third person, but he also knew to be polite when in need. You get me out of here with clean papers in under an hour, and I will do just that. Sabo seemed pleased. He nodded.
I recently came into possession of a consignment of Belgian passports. New serial numbers, not reported stolen. Perfectly legitimate.
Court shook his head emphatically. No, 2/3 of the stolen passports on the market are Belgian. They are guaranteed extra scrutiny. I need something less obvious.
An informed customer. I respect that.
Laszlo stood, leaned on his cane, and made his way to another desk. He strummed his fingers on a little notebook full of pencil scratches. Then he looked up.
Yes, I suppose you could pass as a Kiwi. I've had a few New Zealand passports for a long time. Most of my clients these days are Africans or Arabs. Can't pull off a Kiwi, needless to say. Like I said, these books have been around a while, but Laszlo can doctor the serial number when I put in your information without tainting the hologram.
No way it can be traced back to a missing lot.
Fine. Sabo sat back down and blew out a sigh that showed Gentry the movement was tiring and uncomfortable for him.
€5,000.
Gentry nodded, pulled the money from his pack, showed it to Laszlo, but did not hand it over.
What about your appearance? I can photograph you as you are, or we can create something more professional.
I'd like to clean up first.
I've got a shower, a razor, a suit coat and tie that should fit you. You ready yourself while Laszlo works on the papers.
Court walked down a hall and sniffed his way to a bathroom that reeked with body odor and mildew. The shower was equipped with soap and razors and shears, all laid out for operators and illegal immigrants and criminals who needed to camouflage their nastiness for a few minutes in order to pose for a photograph intended to portray them to cops and border control agents as little Lord Fauntleroys. For the first time in 3 months, Gentry shaved his beard. He'd laid his Walther on the little shelf with the shampoo and the razors. It was covered with lather by the time he finished. Gentry cleaned up his shavings. He saw each brown hair as DNA evidence, so he spent more time collecting his beard than he had cutting it off. He looked at himself in the mirror while he combed his brown hair to the right in a wet part that would disappear when it dried. He was aging in the face, the creases of sun and wind and life itself deepening into his skin. He could tell he'd lost weight since he'd begun the Syrian operation, and soft bags of discoloration hung under his eyes. When he was 26, he'd once gone 4 days without sleep. He'd been tracking an enemy agent in Moscow and was following him to a dacha in the country when Court's piece of shit two-door Lada broke down in the snow. The gray man had to stay on the move overland to keep from freezing to death. Now, at 36, he feared he looked much worse after 4 days of work than he did back then when his extraction team pulled him half-frozen out of the ice and into a helicopter. After he dried off, he pulled his rain-soaked pants back on. He was careful to keep the soggy bandage in place on his leg. He cinched his belt and climbed into his boots and socks. He dressed in a white dress shirt Laszlo had left out for him that was too small for his neck, tied the cheap tie with it carefully, a big knot covering the open collar. A blue jacket that felt like cardboard bunched at his shoulders. He didn't even try to button it. Court slid his pistol onto his hip, tossed the extra mags and his multi-tool in his pocket, and went back into Laszlo's lab. Sabo sat in a wheelchair at a drafting table, leaning over an open passport with a razor. He looked up at his customer for a long moment.
Quite a metamorphosis.
Yeah.
Sit for the picture, please.
There was a small plastic chair on a riser in front of a blue background hanging from the ceiling. A digital camera on a tripod was connected to a computer on a desk a few feet away. Court stepped up on the hollow wooden riser and sat in the chair. He fumbled with his coat and tie while Sabot rolled the wheelchair into position behind the camera.
We need to think of a name for the passport, a good Kiwi name.
It's up to you. Whatever is fine. The camera flashed, and Gentry began to stand.
A couple more, please.
He sat back down.
I have a name for you. Don't know if you will like it.
Anything is...
It's flashy, dramatic, mysterious.
Well, I don't think I need...
Why don't we call you Greyman?
Gentry stared blankly into the camera as it flashed in his face.